Welcome everybody. I'm looking at you over there. I see you all over there. So I'm going to try to look at the camera and not at the screen where I see you. Welcome to the Cadets Matter course. I'm Aaron. I think I've met some of you, but not that many of you. But I'm normally a postdoc here, but I'm doing some teaching this semester, and I'm excited to be teaching you about Cadets Matter, which is the field in which I do research. So to start off today, I'm going to begin with a little bit of an overview of what is condensed matter physics. And then I'm going to, after that, start by talking about free electron gas, so behavior of many non-interacting free electrons. Actually, let me go grab something quickly before I continue. So, what exactly is condensed matter physics? So, if I was to give a one sentence answer, what I would say is the study of the collective behavior many particles. And this is often divided into multiple sort of large categories. So maybe some subsets of condensed matter include so-called soft condensed matter, which is about classical systems, such as often biophysics, polymers, that kind of thing. And then the field of so-called hard condensed matter. This is hard as opposed to soft, not hard as opposed to easy, although it is hard as opposed to easy as well, but soft is as well. So hard condensed matter is basically quantum condensed matter. So the main category of that, or like the largest piece, is the traditional field of what would be called solid state physics. So this class is going to be all about hard condensed matter. We're not going to touch soft condensed matter at all. And that's true about the whole condensed matter department at PI is all hard condensed matter. Let me go this way. Wait a minute. Okay, I guess this is the one. How much do you see vertically? Like, how high up can you see on this board, how high up can you see?
Now we can see this class.
This class, okay, so you can see up to about here.
Yep.
Okay. That's fine, okay, great. So I'm gonna switch to this board for now. Okay, so I'm going to now give you a bit of an overview of hard condensed matter. So the way I think about it, this field exists on kind of a spectrum from what I would consider to be like um, realistic or practical to the most abstract things. So an example of what might be an abstract topic is to predict a new phase of matter using field theory. An example of a more sort of practical side of things could be compute thermal conductivity for a particular metal. So like this side of things is you can do some calculations, still theoretical work, but it's very much designed to understand an like one particular experimental system. Whereas this side is more about understanding sort of a broad class of behavior, a new phase of matter, and predicting something that may have never been seen in experiments. Then somewhere in the middle, we have models that roughly capture the qualitative behavior of real materials. So on this end, you're going to be making like very quantitative predictions. If I did an experiment, I would measure a specific heat, which is exactly this, and then you can get to 1% accuracy. In the and on the right, you're going to say, here's a new phase of matter. I may have no idea in nature whether this even can exist. Well, I know in principle it can exist, but I don't know whether it does exist or not. In the center, we're in between those two extremes. We're going to look at models which are not really quantitatively accurate to real materials, but at least we know they're good models of things that exist in nature that have been observed. So for the most part, this course is going to be in this center area. We're going to be looking at some sort of abstract or general models that nevertheless correspond pretty well with things that we know exist in nature. All right. Let's see. So what is this class actually going to consist of exactly? So I divide it into two parts. Part one will be non-interacting systems. So we're going to start today with free electrons, and then after that, we're going to put our non-interacting electrons onto a lattice. They're no longer free, but they're not interacting with each other. And then we'll talk about band theory and things that follow from that. So this is sort of the most important topic from the traditional field of solid-state physics. And then part two we'll discuss some systems that have strong interactions. This will include some tricks that we'll learn for doing exact solutions on particular models, in particular the quantum Ising model and the toric code model, to learn about some quantum phase transitions and topology. And then after that, we're going to end the course with some numerical methods that can be used to solve more general strongly interacting systems. So roughly, this is going to be weeks 1 to 3, and this will be weeks 4 to 5. That's my current guess, but it's of course subject to change depending on how quickly or slowly I actually end up going.
Just one question, Aaron.
Yes.
Would you say in general there is a tendency for models to move from abstract to the middle? Because the aim would be, right, to actually see these new faces, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So one thing people try to do, if you do predict a new phase of matter, some field theory approach or something, people do often try to look for then a model that's in this middle region that would realize that phase. That's right. And you know, it tends that it does happen, but often it takes years or maybe even decades, and then there can be some controversy as well about when somebody claims that the model has realized the phase, whether it's actually true or not. But yes. So I think this is sort of the initial overview that I want to give before we get onto doing actual physics. So if anybody has questions, I'd be happy to hear them at the moment. If not, that's also fine.
I had a question.
Yes.
Some of us are doing different courses. So I was thinking, is it feasible that maybe we don't do the first 3 weeks and come only for the strong interactions part? Or means, is it possible that we'll understand things that way? Or if I don't know.
So, the short answer to that is you should attend this week.
Uh-huh.
For sure. You could probably skip weeks 2 and 3 if like for the thing you're saying. I think that would be okay. But this week is very important, I think, because, well, the main focus of this week is to make sure we have a really good understanding of second quantization. And that's going to be a key tool in the last piece of the course as well.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, well, maybe I'll also take this opportunity since I think it's been long enough, hopefully everyone is here who will be here, that I also want to introduce our TA for the class. So I wanted to wait and make sure everyone's here before I do that. But no, Yuxiao, I see you're there. Can you just say hello to everyone for a second?
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah.
Good, yeah. Hi, I'm Yuxiao. PhD student in parameter. Yeah, just please feel free to contact me if you have any like after class questions. Ask. Yeah, that's all. I will kind of join our tutorials and also grade your homework or so. Yeah. So, yeah. Feel free to contact.
Okay, great. Thanks. As you have said, so he'll be helping with the tutorials, and you should feel free to ask him questions that you have. So I encourage you to do that. Okay, well, I'm now going to erase the boards since I'm just using these two boards. And then we'll move on to the first physics topic. But in the meantime, while I'm erasing the boards, feel free to, if you come up with a question, feel free to ask. Okay, so it doesn't sound like there are any questions for the moment. And so I'll move on to doing actual physics. So we're going to begin the class with what's called the free electron gas. So this is the simplest model of a metal. Actually, I just remembered I can take my mask off because I'm in the room by myself. Okay, great. That'll be better. Look, I'm human. Okay, so we're going to be considering the free electron gas, which is the simplest model of a metal. And basically, we're going to assume we have some cubical chunk of metal, which has dimensions Lx, Ly, and Lz. And inside this chunk, electrons move freely. And they do not interact. So we can write down the Hamiltonian of this system. Which is just the kinetic energy, p squared over 2m. And we have this kinetic energy for each electron in the system, which we assume there is n of them. And our goal, initially, is to find the eigenstates energies of H. So step one is to understand what a many-particle Hamiltonian really means. So for example, when I write p1 squared over 2m, what I really mean is p1 squared over 2m tensor identity on 2, tensor identity on 3, tensor dot dot dot, identity on n. So this acts on electron 1. This acts on electron 2. This is on 3. And so forth, down to the last electron. So it's not really true. When you look at the sum this way, it appears that you have one, each term acts on one electron. That's not really accurate. What's actually true is that every term acts on every electron. It's just that most of those actions are the identity. They don't do anything. Let me also ask before I go further, are you familiar with this tensor product symbol? Maybe if you see thumbs up, show of hands, or whatever. Okay, looks like everyone's happy with it. That's great. Okay, let me switch boards. Okay, so the next thing to note, step two, is that all the terms commute with each other. So I think this is clear because each one is the identity operator everywhere except for acting on one electron. And they all act on different electrons, and identity commutes with everything else. So therefore, all the different terms in the Hamiltonian commute with each other.
But would this also be true for if we had some cross terms, some interaction terms, or is it only for this particular free Hamiltonian?
Only for the free Hamiltonian.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, actually, it's not that it's free that's the important part. What's important is that every term only involves one electron. There's no ij terms. That's what's important. So, okay, yeah, so actually, that's a good point. So let me actually say something that this form is what we refer to as non-interacting. So okay, maybe I will, as an aside, define this. So this is going to be one definition of the term non-interacting Hamiltonian. Is that H is equal to sum on I, which are sum over the electrons, of Hi. This is a non-interacting Hamiltonian where every term acts on only one electron at a time. Where, remember that this Hi, what I really mean is the tensor of all these identities, just like I said before. So this property about all terms commuting and so forth comes from this non-interacting property. So this means we can simultaneously diagonalize, and thus we can solve one term at a time. So for example, let's look at P1 square root over 2M. It's the first term, right? So we can find the eigenvalues and eigenstates and eigenvalues of this particular term by itself, and then combine it with all the other ones. And here, an eigenstate will look like this. If you see what I mean, this is going to be some particular state, which we have to find what that is using this operator. But in our eigenstate, the state of particle 2, the state of particle 3, the state of particle n can all be anything. It doesn't matter because this is the identity operator. Everything's an eigenstate of identity. So basically, that means that we just need to find this. Any questions? Okay.
Quick question. This is like we say, this is the eigenstate of H1, right? It's not an eigenstate of H total, right? H total would only be if all of these tensor products are eigenstates of H1, H2, something like that. Right?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. Exactly, yes. Yes, so I was going to come back to that in a minute, but yes, that's exactly right. Okay, so okay, so we've reduced our problem basically for the time being to finding eigenstates of the single particle p squared over 2m operator. And this, of course, is quantum mechanics as you have seen many times before. So the solution, as I think you all know well, is plane waves. I'm going to label these actually with k. So call it phi k is equal to some normalization constant times the plane wave e to the I k dot r, where r is our normal position vector, x comma y comma z, and k is kx, ky, kz. Okay, but now there's going to be a subtlety, which is quantization. And here's where we bring in our first big assumption of condensed matter. Namely, we assume that this box of stuff that we have has periodic boundary conditions. So, like, you know, what I mean by that is in two dimensions, if you imagine we have a box which is Lx by Ly, then periodic boundary conditions like this would give us a torus where Lx is here, and Ly is here. So in three dimensions, obviously you can't draw, I can't draw on a board what this looks like, but you can imagine that you know, this algebraically, this face of my cube is considered equal to this face of the cube. And same with the other dimensions. So this seems kind of unrealistic. So you might think that a better approximation would be to say that this is a finite box, because that's what you have in real life. You have a finite box. Like a metal doesn't actually have periodic boundary conditions in real life, right? It has finite edges. And you could treat it as like an infinite square well, basically, where the wave function has to go to zero at the boundaries of the box. But it turns out that's overly simple, and that in real materials, surfaces are really hard and complicated. So why do we do periodic boundary conditions? It's because we don't want to deal with the edge of the system. The edge of the system is hard. We want to forget about that. And furthermore, these systems are really large. They're much larger than typical spacing between atoms and so forth. And so if you're deep in the middle of the crystal, you have no idea whether there's periodic boundary conditions or finite boundary conditions or whatever. You're far from the edge. So this condition cannot matter. That's the idea. If we're trying to find the properties of this, the bulk of this system, there's absolutely nothing wrong with making this periodic boundary condition assumption. And that way we don't need to worry about the edges. It makes our work much easier. So this is the big assumption we're going to make. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that my wave function has to be periodic. Hence, e to the I k dot r plus nx lx and y ly and z lz maybe it's not what I want to say. Okay. Let me do them one at a time just to be maybe clearer. Okay, let's say that. So if I add ly comma 0 comma 0 to r, my wave function can't change because that's my periodic boundary condition. The result of this is that e to the I kx times lx has to equal 1. Likewise, same thing for y and z. As a result, the allowed values of k are 2 pi times nx over lx, ny over ly, and nz over lz, where each of these n's is some integer.
I do have a question.
Okay.
What is the relevance of n being finite? Because I thought that perhaps these periodic boundary conditions could also be a way of picturing n as being infinite, even though in a physical system we have a finite volume. If you have periodic boundary conditions, you kind of might have n going to infinity, which if we were doing thermodynamics would be relevant.
Well, so yes, we are in fact going to take the limit of, so you mean n, you mean capital N, the number of electrons, right? Yes. So we are in fact going to take the limit of this number of electrons going to infinity. In particular, what we're going to do is we're going to try to write everything in terms of quantities that don't depend on the size of the system. So it's going to be the ratio of N over V, which is Lx times Ly times N, Lz. So we're trying to write everything in terms of the density of electrons. So that's going to be our goal. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure if that answers your question or not.
Yeah, I just had in mind that, you know, you need infinite n for all these thermodynamic phenomena, like phase transitions, as you mentioned. And then I thought this might link up with the boundary conditions.
Periodic boundary conditions does not mean that we take many copies of the thing and stack them together. It's not like we actually have it. So maybe you're thinking of a periodic wave function, like that there's an infinite, we have a, you know, we define a wave function within a finite region, but actually it extends by just copying that in space across, you know, larger region of space. That's not what we're saying. We're saying we really have a finite volume of space. It's just that our volume of space has a weird topology where instead of being just a square is actually a torus. Or instead of being a cube, it's whatever the hypertorus is, if you can picture that, which I cannot.
Okay, then that's clear. Just get rid of weird surfaces.
Yeah. Okay, and then as a quick note, You can also compute the normalization, and you should find that it's one over square root of V, where V, again, is the volume LX times LY times LZ. So this finishes our calculation of the single particle eigenstates. No, I forgot something. Okay, sorry. Let me go back and fix what I forgot. This, of course, Okay, this is step three continued. Sorry for the weird location. The corresponding eigenenergies are, of course, h bar squared k squared over 2m, where k squared, what I mean is vector k dot into itself, as usual. In other words, this is going to be 2 pi squared times nx over lx squared plus same thing with y and z. Okay, so that's just an aside, which we don't really need right away, but eventually we'll want to this energy that corresponds to our state. Okay, so now let's talk about many particle eigenstates. So we know that the eigenstates of P1 squared over 2m tensor all these identities are ik acting on particle 1 tensor anything. And likewise for identity tensor P2 squared over 2m, et cetera. Then we have anything tensor, these phi k on say 2, tensor anything, and so forth. And what you can see is that basically, this is the same thing that Manu asked in the question earlier, I believe. So that was basically in each particle slot, one term tells you what the eigenstate must be, and other terms can be anything, so you can then set them safely to whatever you got from the other terms. So as a result, the many-body eigenstates look like IK1 on particle 1, tensor IK2 on particle 2, etc. to IKN on particle n. And each KI satisfies this condition here. So satisfies that ki is equal to 2 pi times n over l for x, y, and z. And furthermore, the energy of this state is sum on I h bar squared ki squared over 2m. Okay, now I claim that these are all the many body eigenstates of this Hamiltonian, but there's actually a problem here. There's something we have left out. So remember, these are electrons. And I want you to imagine the case that K1 is equal to K2, which is equal to K3. What would be wrong with this wave function in that case?
It won't be anti-symmetric. It won't obey the Pauli exclusion.
That's right. So exactly. So the problem is, what we've written down so far is not in general anti-symmetric. It is, however, an eigenstate of the operator we wrote down. So, so these are all eigenstates. But they may not actually be physical. So, yep. Yeah, we're curious this now. So the physical subset of the eigenstates is given by the Slater determinants. Like this. So notice that the row has all the same one particle eigenstates. And the column is that it acts on the same particle. We can also write this out in the following way. here, which is a sum over permutations of n particles, where the sign, we have a minus one to the sign of the permutation. Or I guess this is just sign of permutation, so whatever. And then each factor here has the index of k is given by the element of the permutation, and then the particles are in order from 1 to n. So this is just another way of rewriting the same Slater determinant. So these are our physical many-body states. So I think one thing that's worth noting is that these are, in fact, still many-body eigenstates. So maybe that's obvious, but I think it does take a moment of thought, because in general, if you take a bunch of eigenstates of an operator and you take a linear combination of them, you won't have an eigenstate anymore. The reason why, however, that this is not a problem here is that every component of the sum here has the same energy, and therefore their sum is still an eigenstate with that same energy. Okay, so we have one last step that we want to do, and for now, is solving this problem. Okay, by the way, let me give this state a name. Forget that. But we're on to our last step, which is to find in particular the many-body ground state. So we know that we have n electrons and that we found our many-body eigenstates have energies like this. And we can now think about these k's. Form a grid in 3D. I'm only going to draw a 2D version because it's easier. So for example, this point would be 2 pi times 0, 1 over Ly, 2 over Lz, for example. And the energy is basically the distance from the origin. Which is to say k squared. So if I only had one particle, which value of k would it have?
Zero.
It'd be zero, right? And then if I have, let's say, well, if I have two particles, this is a trick question. When we haven't talked about this, there's also spin. So actually, every one of these dots can accommodate two particles. So if I had two, they'd both have zero. But let's say if I had three, then the third one would go to one of these four points or one of the equivalent ones in the x direction, right? And you can continue filling them up like this. And so with n particles, what we will do is we will doubly fill for spin up and spin down the n over 2 orbitals closest to k equals 0. Doing so, there will be a maximal absolute value of k of filled states, which we call kf, or the Fermi momentum. However, we're out of time, so we will find that in the next class tomorrow. So
could you maybe just say a few words about how the tutorials are going to work?
Sure. I have written some basically exercises, problems for you to work on. We'll again, of course, can be on Zoom. I'll have you all join. I will put you into breakout rooms of, I don't know, three people probably. And you can work on the problems together with other people in your breakout room, and Yuxiao and I will circulate around to different breakout rooms and help you with working on these problems. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, just thought, in case there's anything special.
No, I don't have anything in particular unusual planned.
And how many homework sets are going to be there?
That I haven't totally decided. Most likely number will be 3. Okay. I anticipate the first one I will send out around the beginning of next week. do around a week later. And after that, probably two more after that, but I'm not 100% sure.
Thanks.
Now, so we are a few minutes after the hour. I'm happy to stick around for another few minutes to answer questions, but if you want to stay, but if you have to go, of course, we're done with the official time, and I'm happy to see you tomorrow.